Part 2. Confirmed Victims by State. Washington. Linda Ann Healy, February 1st, 1974. Linda Ann Healy was a beautiful, intelligent, 21-year-old brunette student at the University of Washington, where she was majoring in psychology and was known for her morning weather and ski reports at a local radio station. She also loved to help others, even working with disabled children in her free time, and was also a talented musician. She had grown up in an upper-class suburban area in Seattle with her parents and two siblings, and was described as ambitious, charismatic, and full of life. Her big blue eyes and beautiful smile was mesmerizing, and Linda was well-liked and popular. The day before she disappeared, Linda woke up at 5:30 a.m. and went to make her weather report at the Northwest Ski Reports before heading to her university classes and choir practice. She had invited her parents and brother over for dinner the next day and was excited to see them, picking up some groceries after her busy day and returning to her off-campus apartment at approximately 8:30 p.m. Her friends invited her to join them for a few drinks at Dante's Tavern, so they all walked there together. They got back to the apartment around 11:30 p.m., and after talking to her friend for a while and saying goodnight, Linda headed to her own bedroom in the basement. She was never seen again. During the night, Bundy had visited her apartment and had tested the door, delighted that it was left unlocked. He planned to return later, and when her alarm went off at 5:30 a.m. the next day, her roommate Barbara Little couldn't find her and just assumed that she went to work. When she didn't show up for classes or her family dinner, her mother called the Seattle Police Department, who went to search her apartment for clues. It was neat and orderly, according to Lieutenant Pat Murphy, and the bed was made up neatly, which sparked increasing concern as her friend said that she never made her bed before work and certainly never tucked the covers in with the pillow underneath. It was always on top. It was when the bedsheet was peeled back that they found the bloodstains that were left on her nightgown and sheets and noticed that her backpack, keys, clothing from the previous night, and a satin pillowcase were missing. Detective Bob Keppel from the King County Police said that the crime scene was so unique that it will always be etched in his memory. It had appeared that someone had broken into the apartment, attacked Linda while she was sleeping, dressed her in the clothes she wore the night before, and carried her out of the door in the middle of the night, and there wasn't a single sight or sound picked up from anyone. Ted Bundy lived 14 blocks away from Linda Ann Healy at the time of her disappearance and frequented the Safeway store she had visited that night. His cousin, Edna Cowell, socialized within Linda's circle of friends, so it is possible that he had encountered her before, which could mean that he was stalking her before he attacked her. Linda went missing on a Thursday night, which was one of the nights that Ted did not have evening classes. Kathleen McChesney, a detective with the King County Police, investigated her disappearance and recalled how odd it was that the usual morning weather report was not done by her. That was very unusual because she was a person you relied on 5 days a week to tell you what was going on in the mountains, she said. Keppel, McChesney, and a team of investigators interviewed up to 65 people about her disappearance, but had no leads on the case, saying, "We couldn't do anything except sit and man a telephone. It was pretty bad." Her remains, skull and mandible, were recovered at an isolated site at Taylor Mountains. She had been bludgeoned, abducted, and driven to this site, where Bundy likely raped and murdered her in accordance with his M.O. In interviews, when he was questioned about this murder, which he claimed was his first, he said, "My initial reaction is that I don't think I can." No details about her abduction and murder have ever been revealed. All that we know is that she was likely decapitated, based on the evidence found. It is reported that Bundy had picked up his unemployment check 2 days before her disappearance, and that he had been struggling with his midterms in college, which could have been a stressor that triggered his feelings of inadequacy and subsequent rage. Her remains were buried at Sunset Hills Memorial Park in Bellevue, King County, Washington. Rest in peace, Linda Ann Healy, 3rd of July, 1952, to the 1st of February, 1974. Age, 21. Donna Gail Manson, March 12, 1974. 19-year-old Donna Gail Manson was a student at Evergreen State College in Olympia in Washington when she disappeared on March 12, 1974, while she was on her way to a jazz concert on campus. She often hitchhiked, skipped classes, and traveled alone on buses for a few days away, so she was not reported missing until March 18th by her friend, Deanna Ray. She was reportedly suffering from depression at the time of her disappearance and was suspected of committing suicide until Bundy confessed to her murder before he was executed in 1989. In his confession tapes, Bundy said that he burned this victim's skull in his ex-girlfriend Elizabeth Klupfer's fireplace, but many have speculated that this was just a comment made to haunt her. It would have been difficult to hide the stench of burning hair and flesh, and the temperature of a household fireplace would likely not have been sufficient to obliterate a human skull. No remains of this victim have ever been found. Bundy had picked up an unemployment check the day before abducting and murdering this victim. Rest in peace, Donna Gail Manson, 9th of June, 1954, to the 12th of March, 1974. Age, 19. Susan Elaine Rancourt, April 17, 1974. Susan Elaine Rancourt was an 18-year-old freshman from Anchorage, Alaska, and majoring in biology at Central Washington State University in Ellensburg. In high school, she had been the homecoming queen and a cheerleader, known by her peers for her warmth and responsible character. On the evening of April 17, 1974, she attended a meeting for prospective dormitory counselors in a campus library with approximately 100 people, which ended at 10 p.m. Susan was looking forward to watching an international film later that night after finishing with her laundry, but never made it back to her dorm room. She had beautiful, long blonde hair and bright blue eyes, and carried herself with confidence and enthusiasm. She was last seen wearing a short-sleeved sweater, grey corduroy pants, and a yellow rain jacket. On April 14th, Bundy had attempted to lure Jane Curtis into his car by wearing a sloppily assembled arm sling, long coat, and scruffy woolen cap, and asked her for some help to carry his books to his car. She obliged and walked beside him, observing him and his strange eyes. When they reached his VW, he asked her to unlock his car for him and gruffly ordered her into the car, which frightened her. She said, "What?" And he then politely asked her to please get into the car. When the door was opened, she noticed that the passenger seat had been removed and that the car light did not come on, which spooked her. She hurriedly excused herself and scampered away, and thankfully, Bundy did not follow her with a crowbar. 3 days later, Bundy had tried the same trick with Kathleen De Oliver when she exited the campus library. She walked beside him as they made their way to his car, where he dropped his keys, and after fumbling around on the ground, asked her to help him pick them up. She did not want to bend down in front of him and rather suggested that they step back to see if they could spot his reflection in the moonlight, which they did. She swooped up the keys, placed them in his hand and said, "Good night." Moments later, Susan Rancourt exited the library, where she stumbled on Bundy, who was watching her just outside of his car in the dark. She was never seen again, and the next day, one of her roommates reported her missing to Bill Clayton, campus security, who then reported it to Alfred Pickle, his superior. Flyers were created and distributed around the campus, and her parents flew in from Anchorage to look for their daughter and offer a reward for finding her. Her father, who had paid for her extensive dental work, knew that something was wrong when he found her dental floss in the dormitory. Odd, but sincerely a concern for him because he knew that she would never have left without it. Her remains, skull and mandible, were discovered along with the remains of three other women on Taylor Mountain in 1975. Rest in peace, Susan Elaine Rancourt, 12th of October, 1955, to the 17th of April, 1974. Age, 18. Roberta Kathleen Parks, May 6th, 1974. Roberta Kathleen Parks, known as Kathy Parks, was a 20-year-old California native studying at Oregon State University in Corvallis, where she was abducted by Ted Bundy on May 6, 1974. Concerned that police were onto him, after establishing that his pattern was killing at a rate of one victim per month, and actively looking for Miss May, the predicted next victim of a suspected serial killer, he decided to sustain his pattern outside of his usual hunting ground, heading over 300 miles south. Kathy headed out of her room at around 11 p.m. on May 5th to visit the canteen for her usual late-night dinner, telling her friends Cheryl Smith and Lorraine Fargo that she would see them later, both who recalled that she had seemed slightly down that night. She had reportedly received a recent phone call from her sister about their father having a heart attack, and while they had a strained relationship, it managed to affect her emotionally. She had been drinking more in the weeks leading up to her disappearance, and according to Bundy's confession tapes, had looked sad or lonely as she sat in the canteen, the perfect person for him to prey on. Bundy entered the Memorial University Commons cafeteria to approach Kathy, posing as a student who also just wanted a late-night bite to eat. He made a statement in his third-person confessions about vulnerable people having a certain posture and mimic about them, which got him into speculation mode, where he would see if his target were depressed enough to accept a drink with him at a local tavern. Unfortunately, his plan worked, and Kathy accepted his offer, possibly hoping that it would lift her spirits. Once she was in the car, Bundy drove her all the way to the Taylor Mountain site, where he had already murdered and dumped his previous victims, and raped her before murdering her. He had deviated from his usual blunt force trauma method of transporting his victim, likely enjoying Parks's depression and distress for a prolonged omnipotent experience. Her studies focused on liberal arts and religion, which poses the possibility that she may have pleaded with him in a religious context, something which only escalated Bundy's sadism. His views on religion were that it was a way to guilt-trip people into thinking and behaving in a certain way, and that people used it to control others. If she had taken this route, he would have certainly prolonged her suffering to prove his point. Bundy confessed to her murder shortly before he was executed, but did not provide details of it. Her remains, skull and mandible, were found at the Taylor Mountain site in 1975. However, her skull was beaten beyond recognition, which suggests that he inflicted tremendous rage on her. Rest in peace, Roberta Kathleen Parks, 27th of February 1954 to the 7th of May 1974. Age 20. Brenda Carol Ball, June the 1st, 1974. 22-year-old Brenda Carol Ball was a student at Highline Community College, who had dropped out 2 weeks before her disappearance to find herself, a popular direction at the time. She had long brown hair and beautiful brown eyes and was described by her peers as a free spirit. On Friday, May 31st, Brenda was planning to meet her friends at Sun Lakes the next day to celebrate Memorial Weekend at the popular campsite and park. At 2 p.m., she told them that she was going to the Flame Tavern that night and would hitch a ride to the park the next day. Brenda was known to hitchhike and lived a liberated life, so her friends were not concerned. The next day, when she did not show up to Sun Lakes, they were a bit concerned, but assumed that she had changed her plans or didn't manage to get a ride. Brenda was last seen alive in the parking lot of the Flame Tavern around closing time at 2 a.m., where she was approached by a man wearing an arm sling who offered her the ride that she had been begging for. 3 weeks passed until her friends reported her missing, mostly because they knew that she was an impulsive adventurer who could have been on a spontaneous trip with someone that she met at the bar. During that time, they discovered that Brenda had not called her parents, used her bank account, or taken anything out of her room. Her remains, skull and mandible, were discovered by a group of hikers at the Taylor Mountain site in 1975, where Brenda became Ted Bundy's official fifth victim. In his confession tapes, he said that Brenda had willingly accompanied him to his Seattle apartment, where he raped her and murdered her. However, her skull was found to have severe blunt force trauma, so he may have knocked her out before he raped her and dumped her body, which he returned to for days following her death. Rest in peace, Brenda Carol Ball, the 8th of November 1951 to the 1st of June 1974, age 22. George Ann Hawkins, June 11th, 1974. On June 10th, 1974, George Ann Hawkins, a student at the University of Washington, attended a campus party with one of her sorority sisters, but didn't stay long because she had to prepare for an upcoming Spanish exam. As she left, she told her friend that she was going to make a stop at the Beta Theta Pi house to kiss her boyfriend goodnight and collect some study notes from him. It was only 6 blocks away from her dormitory and was very safe, with well-lit pathways and students still buzzing around as they met up to cram for finals. She arrived at her boyfriend's room at around 12:30 a.m. on June 11th, 1974, stayed for half an hour, and then headed back to her sorority, Kappa Alpha Theta House. Her roommate called her boyfriend the next morning, concerned that George Ann had not returned to her room. He confirmed that she had left his room around 1 a.m. Police were alerted, and an immediate investigation was launched due to the increasing disappearances of campus girls. She was never seen again, and is still listed as a missing person. Despite a proactive response, widespread publicity, and an extensive search for her, it became tragically clear that her disappearance was just like the 5 girls before her, where she could safely be presumed dead. Bundy confessed to her murder in his sessions with Detective Robert Keppel before he was executed, saying that some of the unidentified remains found at the site in Issaca were hers. He abducted her from the back of her sorority house, after asking for her assistance to carry his briefcase to his car, using crutches and limping to gain her sympathy. She usually wore contact lenses or glasses, but was not wearing either on the night she disappeared because she had been studying all day and decided to give them a bit of a rest. When she leaned into his car to put his briefcase in the back, he hit her over the head with a crowbar, pushed her into the car, and drove away. He told detectives that she regained consciousness during the drive to his Issaca dumping site, where she mumbled about her Spanish exam and assumed that he was her Spanish tutor. Once at the site, he said that he carried her out the car, strangled her with an old piece of rope, and decapitated her, burying her head somewhere in the woods on a rocky hillside. When the remains of two of Bundy's victims were located near Lake Sammamish, there was an additional set of remains, femur and vertebrae, but they were so badly decomposed that they could not be identified. They are assumed to be the remains of George Ann Hawkins, particularly because Bundy cleared that up for detectives. He also confessed that he returned to the parking lot where he abducted her the next morning to pick up her shoe and earring that had fallen off when he knocked her unconscious before law enforcement had taped off the area to search for evidence. She was the youngest of two daughters of the Hawkins family and had grown up in Tacoma, Washington. She had long, shiny brown hair with a middle parting, beautiful bronze skin, and was a bright and happy young girl with great ambitions. She was studying television journalism and would have been perfect for the role. Rest in peace, George Ann Hawkins, 20th of August, 1955, to the 11th of June, 1974. Age, 18. Janice Ott, July 14th, 1974. Janice Ott was a 24-year-old juvenile caseworker at the King County Juvenile Court in Seattle and was enjoying a beautiful day at Lake Sammamish when she encountered Ted Bundy. On that day, up to 40,000 people had swarmed to the lake to enjoy a picnic, swim, boating, or some relaxing sun-soaking. Ted was wearing a white tennis outfit and had a sling on his arm, and had asked multiple women if they could assist him to unload his boat from his car, but most had declined. When Janice met him, she gladly agreed to help him and walked with him to his car, where he knocked her over the head and pushed her into his Volkswagen. She was never seen again, and for 2 months, exhaustive efforts were made to solve her case. Skeletal remains were found 2 miles east of Lake Sammamish, and were tragically identified as Janice Ott's, as well as Denise Naslin's. In his confession tapes before his execution, he told Detective Keppel that he had left Janice alive and left to abduct Denise Naslin, making one watch the other be murdered by him. Her remains were buried at Fairmount Memorial Park in Spokane, Washington. Rest in peace, Janice Ott. 14th of February, 1951, to the 14th of July, 1974. Age, 24. Denise Marie Naslin, July 14th, 1974. Denise Marie Naslin was a beautiful 19-year-old brunette who had visited Lake Sammamish with her boyfriend on July 14th, 1974. The temperatures were soaring, and the 512-acre park was buzzing with activity. After a brief argument with her boyfriend, Denise made a trip to the park's public restrooms around 4:30 p.m. and never returned. Her boyfriend, friends, and dog waited for her until the park closed, hoping that she had just taken a long walk to clear her mind. Bundy had abducted her within 4 hours of taking Janice Ott, and had driven her to the same site where he was keeping Janice, where he made one watch the other get murdered. Denise's remains were found 2 miles east of Lake Sammamish along with Janice Ott's, a tragic end to her young life, one that shattered her mother's heart forever. Her remains were buried at Forest Lawn Cemetery in Seattle, King County, Washington. Rest in peace, Denise Marie Naslin, 10th of October, 1955, to the 14th of July, 1974. Age, 19. Utah, Nancy Wilcox, October 2nd, 1974. Nancy Wilcox was a 16-year-old cheerleader from Olympus High School in Holiday, Utah, who left her home to buy some gum and never returned. She worked part-time as a waitress and was active in the Mormon Church. Initially, authorities classified her as a runaway, but when more girls started disappearing in the same manner, they realized that there was a more sinister reason for her disappearance. She was last spotted getting a ride in a yellow Volkswagen, and Bundy had been in the area at the time. Her remains were never found. Bundy confessed to her murder before he was executed, but said that she had never entered his car. He said that he abducted her at knife point, raped and strangled her in a nearby orchard, and buried her remains near Capitol Reef National Park, which is more than 200 miles from her original location. A memorial marker was placed on her father's grave in Murray City Cemetery, Salt Lake County, Utah. Rest in peace, Nancy Wilcox, 4th of July, 1958, to the 2nd of October, 1974. Age, 16. Melissa Ann Smith, October 18th, 1974. Melissa Ann Smith was the 17-year-old daughter of Police Chief Louis Smith, who had always tried to keep her out of danger. On the 18th of October, 1974, Melissa walked to a nearby pizza parlor to console a friend who had been fighting with her boyfriend. She was planning to head back home and pack an overnight bag for a slumber party, but never made it home or to the party. Her body was found in Summit Park on October 27th, 1974, where an autopsy confirmed that she had been raped, sodomized, and strangled to death. Ted Bundy confessed to her murder before he was executed in 1989. Her remains were buried in Midvale City Cemetery, Salt Lake County, Utah. Rest in peace, Melissa Ann Smith, 4th of July, 1957, to the 18th of October, 1974. Age, 17. Laura Ann Amy, October 31st, 1974. Laura Ann Amy attended a Halloween party at a cafe on October 31st, 1974, but got bored and left, intending to hitchhike her way to the city of Lehigh, where she lived with her parents. As she crossed through a park, Bundy had picked his next perfect victim, offering her a ride. She willingly got into his car and was never seen again. Her family waited 4 days to report her missing. 1 month later, her naked body was discovered in American Fork Canyon, a short distance from where she was last seen. The autopsy confirmed that she had been kept alive for a few days and had been raped and beaten to death. Her face was almost destroyed beyond recognition, with a deep cut in her head, a broken jaw, a fractured skull, and major injuries to her vagina and anus. Her remains were buried in Fairview Upper Cemetery, San Pete County, Utah. Rest in peace, Laura Ann Amy, 21st of August, 1957, to November, 1974. Age, 17. Susan Curtis, June 28th, 1975. Susan Curtis was a 15-year-old girl who disappeared from a youth conference at Brigham Young University in Layton, Utah, on June 28th, 1975. When Bundy confessed to her murder before he was executed in 1989, he told detectives that he had buried her remains near Price, Utah, 75 miles southeast of Provo. Tragically, her remains were never found, and details about her murder were never revealed by her killer. Rest in peace, Susan Curtis, 18th of May, 1960, to the 28th of June, 1975. Age, 15. Colorado, Karen Eileen Campbell, January 12, 1975. Karen Eileen Campbell was a 23-year-old Dearborn nurse when she disappeared from a ski resort while on holiday with her fiancé. They were staying at the Wildwood Inn in Snowmass, Colorado, along with his two children, which was partly also a business trip for him. Her fiancé, Dr. Raymond F. Godowski, was a cardiologist who attended conference meetings throughout the day on January 12, 1975. And later, the whole family enjoyed an afternoon of skiing before heading out to dinner to the Stew Pot, a local restaurant. Once they had returned to the inn, Karen wanted a magazine to read before bedtime and headed out to get one on the second floor, where Ted Bundy intercepted her. She was never seen again. Her body was discovered in a snowbank less than 3 miles from the hotel, where it was evident that she had been beaten to death like his other victims. In 1975, while Bundy was in prison in Utah for the assault and attempted kidnapping of Carol Duranche, he was arrested for the murder of Karen Campbell, which he had been a suspect for since it happened. He was charged with her murder, but escaped jail in 1977. Once recaptured in Florida, he was charged with her murder, along with his other victims, and sentenced to death. Her remains were buried at the Cadillac Memorial Gardens West in Wayne County, Michigan. Rest in peace, Karen Eileen Campbell, 20th of September, 1951, to the 12th of January, 1975, age 23. Julie Cunningham, March 15, 1975. Julie Cunningham was a 26-year-old shop clerk and part-time ski instructor in Vail, Colorado when she disappeared. She had long, dark, silky hair that parted in the middle, and was a beautiful woman with a mind full of dreams and ambitions. She lived with a girlfriend in the Apollo Park neighborhood and had recently been devastated by a man who she intended to date long term. He, however, did not foresee a future with her. She was on her way to a local tavern that night and was never seen again. Ted Bundy tended to target victims who were under some sort of stress or strain, particularly those that needed a pick-me-up from a comforting man. Bundy told detectives that he lured her into his vehicle by posing as an injured skier who needed help to carry his ski boots and knocked her unconscious. He drove her out to a remote location 80 miles west of Vail, where he raped and strangled her, disposing of her body near Rifle, Colorado, a high desert area surrounded by trees. Her remains were never found. He told detectives that he took a 6-hour drive on 2 occasions, the second time burying her body in a shallow grave. When they asked why he returned, he said, "I don't know why, I just sometimes do that." Necrophilia was the name of the Bundy game. A memorial stone was erected in her name in Fairlawn Burial Park in Hutchinson, Reno County, Kansas. Rest in peace, Julie Cunningham, 10th of January, 1949, to the 15th of March, 1975. Age 26. Denise Lynn Oliverson, April 6, 1975. Denise Lynn Oliverson had an argument with her husband on the afternoon of Sunday, April 6, 1975, in their Grand Junction home and decided to go for a bike ride to her parents' house to get some space. She never arrived and was never seen again. On April 7th, a railroad employee found her sandals and 10-speed yellow bicycle under a viaduct near a railroad bridge close to the Colorado River on Route 50. Her remains were never found, but before he was executed, Bundy confessed to her murder and offered some details. He said that he abducted her, strangled and beat her to death in his car near the Utah state line, and dumped her body in the Colorado River. Using gas receipts, Police were able to confirm that he was in Grand Junction the day that Denise had disappeared, which assisted them to close the case. Rest in peace, Denise Lynn Oliverson, 10th of August, 1950, to the 6th of April, 1975, age 24. Florida, Margaret Elizabeth Bowman, January 15, 1978. Margaret Elizabeth Bowman was born in Hawaii on January 6, 1957. Her father was in the Air Force, and the family moved to St. Petersburg when she was a young girl. She graduated from St. Petersburg High, where she was a member of the tennis, scuba, and drama club, and was the president of the French National Honor Society. At the age of 21, she was a student at Florida State University, majoring in art, with a dream of working as a buyer in an art museum when she graduated. She was pledged Chi Omega, just like her grandmother had. Her friends described her as loyal, sincere, creative, and classy. On January 15, 1975, Ted Bundy entered the sorority through an unlocked side door and bludgeoned Margaret to death in her sleep, also spreading her legs and strangling her with a pair of nylon stockings that he brought along. Margaret had traveled to St. Petersburg on the weekend before she was murdered to visit her family, and the last time that her father heard from her was when she called to say that she was back in Tallahassee safely. Her remains were buried in Largo City Cemetery in Largo, Pinellas County, Florida. Her parents also donated a cross in her honor at the St. Thomas's Episcopal Church in St. Petersburg, which she regularly attended in her adolescence. Rest in peace, Margaret Elizabeth Bowman, 6th of January, 1957, to the 15th of January, 1978. Age, 21. Lisa Levy, January 15th, 1978. Lisa Levy was born in St. Petersburg and graduated from Dixie Hollins High, where she played the flute, was a majorette, and formed part of the Dixie Legend Yearbook Committee. She lived with her mother during summer and school holidays and worked at the Colony Shop at Tyrone Square Mall. Pledging Chi Omega, Lisa majored in fashion merchandising and was described by her peers as cheerful and outgoing. She spent her last night partying at Sherrod's, a disco close to the sorority, returning at approximately 11 p.m. Ted Bundy broke into the sorority and entered her room in the middle of the night on January 15, 1978, where he bludgeoned her to death, raped her, and left bite marks on her buttocks, which essentially served as the evidence to charge him with the sorority murders. He also confessed to her murder before being executed. Her remains were buried in Chapel Hill Memorial Park in Largo, Pinellas County, Florida. Rest in peace, Lisa Levy, 1st of February, 1957, to the 15th of January, 1978. Age, 21. Kimberly Diane Leach, February 9th, 1978. Kimberly Diane Leach was a 12-year-old girl and 7th grader in Lake City, Florida, when she went missing on a rainy, dreary day. "I went to our designated spot to meet up to go to our class together, and she wasn't there," said childhood friend Lisa Little. Kimberly was Bundy's youngest and final victim. He led her to his van when he intercepted her as she scurried to fetch her purse from her room by the instruction of her teacher. She was never seen again. He raped and murdered her and dumped her remains in a pig shed behind Suwannee River State Park, where it was discovered 2 months after her disappearance. A fireman and eyewitnesses had seen a man leading her by the arm to his car before he sped off, and investigators found fibers and gas slips to charge Bundy with her murder. After his trial for her case in 1980, he was sentenced to death for the third time and was executed for her murder on the 24th of January 1989. Her remains were buried in Memorial Cemetery in Lake City, Columbia County, Florida. Her childhood friend, Lisa Little, said, "I don't want people to focus on Ted Bundy, the monster that came to visit our lives for a short time, but had such a profound impact. I want everyone to remember the angel, Kimberly Leach, that was with us, that shared her life with us, her smiles with us, her hopes and dreams with us. I would like for people to remember that she is who needs to be remembered and not him. Rest in peace, Kimberly Diane Leach, 28th of October, 1965, to the 9th of February, 1978. Age, 12. Idaho, Lynette Dawn Culver, May 6th, 1975. Lynette Dawn Culver was a 12-year-old student at Alameda Junior High School in Pocatello, Idaho. She left the school for her lunch break, boarding a bus to Fort Hall from Hawthorne Junior High School and was never seen again. Police initially suspected that she was a runaway, but began to suspect that she had been abducted when nobody heard from her for weeks. Bundy confessed to her murder before he was executed in 1989, although her case has remained a missing persons case, with police suspecting a different murderer to Bundy because four other girls of the same age group disappeared in the late 1970s and early 1980s, which he could not have committed. Bundy, however, said that he took Lynette to a Holiday Inn where he raped her and drowned her in a bathtub. He claimed to have dumped her body in the Snake River, but no remains have ever been located. Rest in peace, Lynette Dawn Culver, 31st of July, 1962, to the 6th of May, 1975. Age, 12. Surviving and escaped victims. Karen Sparks, January 4th, 1975. Karen Sparks was an 18-year-old student at the University of Washington in Seattle, majoring in political science when she was attacked by Ted Bundy. She was living in the university district and was asleep when Bundy entered her bedroom and bludgeoned her nearly to death. "He came into my home, took a bed frame off of my bed, and smashed my skull. And he probably used the same bed frame and smashed it into my vagina and into my bladder. My bladder was totally split," she said. Karen lay in a pool of her own blood for 18 to 20 hours before being discovered by her roommate, Bob, and spent 10 days in a coma after the attack. Her injuries resulted in permanent vision and hearing loss, brain damage, and epileptic fits. When she woke up in the hospital, she asked her dad what had happened, and he replied, "Well, you had a little bump on your head." For years, Sparks preferred to live a life of privacy, completely out of the spotlight, but welcomed the opportunity to feature in the Netflix documentary about her attacker. She said, "Women like us, women that have been attacked, women that have been raped, women that are survivors, they kept their secrets to themselves. I don't know why. We're taught to just get on with it." Before she was located for an interview proposal, most people had assumed that she was brain damaged, unable to speak, and likely spending her time in a psychiatric institution. So the directors of Ted Bundy, The Confession Tapes, were more than pleased to have found her and included her in the series. She had lived a brave and happy life after her attack, becoming an accountant, wife, and mother. "Even though I was victimized, I wasn't a victim. I mean, my husband knows, but I never directly talked to my own children about it because, you know, I am a mom," she said. Weeks after her attack, Bundy went on to kill his first official known victim, Linda Ann Healy. Carol DeRonche, November 8, 1974. 18-year-old Carol DeRonche encountered Ted Bundy in the fall of 1974 in Salt Lake City, Utah, when he approached her shortly after she had arrived at the mall and entered Walden's bookstore for some browsing on a Friday afternoon. He introduced himself as Officer Roseland, a police officer in full attire, telling her that he had noticed that someone had tried to break into her car and that he would accompany her to go and investigate if anything had been taken from it. She followed him outside, noticing the slight smell of alcohol on his breath, and immediately saw that nothing had been taken from the car. In response, she asked him for some identification. He pulled out his wallet and produced a police badge, much to her surprise. He walked her across the street to a laundromat, which he said was the substation, but when he couldn't gain access to it, said authoritatively that she would have to come with him to the main police station to file a report, which she agreed to do. She thought it was rather odd that he was driving a Volkswagen instead of a normal patrol car, but decided that perhaps it was because he was undercover or had a valid reason for it. When they got into his car, he drove her off into a side street and stopped on the curb by an elementary school. That is the moment that she started to panic. I had never been so frightened in my entire life. I know this is cliche, but my whole life went before my eyes, she said. He slammed a handcuff onto her right wrist, battling to get it on her left, pulled out a gun and said, "I'll blow your head off." She fought for her life, somehow managing to escape the car and run. I was angry at him for thinking he could do something like that to me. I remember thinking, my parents are never going to know what happened to me. I might have never been found, and that was my feeling, to fight, and I just had to get away with all my strength. He chased her with a crowbar, but she managed to flag down an elderly couple and beg them to take her to the police station. Duronch had survived Ted Bundy, but had few answers until months later when police called her in to identify a man that they had arrested that matched her description. They had arrested him after finding a kill kit in his car, a bag containing masks, rope, and a variety of weapons, gloves, and trash bags. While Bundy had changed his appearance and mannerisms entirely, Carol was still able to identify him in a lineup, after which Bundy went on trial for her attempted assault and abduction. In court, she testified against him, even though most people did not believe that a law student that was part of a Mormon church could have ever been an attacker or serial killer. He was sentenced to a 90-day jail evaluation and then to a 1-to-15-year charge, which was his first arrest and escape that subsequently took place. A few months later, Bundy was on the FBI's 10 most wanted fugitives list. Karen Chandler, January 15, 1978. Karen Chandler was a student at Florida State University in 1978 and a member of the Chi Omega sorority house. While Tallahassee was considered a beautiful and safe space, her parents felt that she was even safer living in the sorority house as opposed to the university's dormitories, where people could safely walk around at 3 a.m. without a worry in the world. Being in Chi Omega was a wonderful part of my life. It would be like having 40 sisters, she said. Just weeks earlier, Ted Bundy had escaped from prison for the second time, taking a flight to Chicago, a train to Michigan, drove to Atlanta, and then hopped on a bus to Tallahassee. While his escape was widely covered on television and in the media, the girls in the sorority did not ever think it possible for him to end up in their bedrooms shortly after his escape. Detectives knew that he was going to kill again, but they did not know where, how, or who. Sometime between 3 and 3:15 a.m., Bundy entered the sorority carrying a wooden club. Minutes later, Karen's face and head were bludgeoned so badly that almost every bone was broken in her face. Detective said, her jaw was actually hanging off on one side. It was only, Only one hinge was still attached. She was totally incoherent and in shock. She remembered lying on her bed trying to scream or talk or do anything, but she couldn't move or do anything. Kathy Kleiner, January 15, 1978. Kathy Kleiner was a 20-year-old student at Florida State University and Chi Omega sorority house member who had enjoyed dinner with her fiancé on January 15, 1978, before returning to the sorority for a good night's rest. She put on her yellow flannel pajama that she got for Christmas and slid into bed in her beautiful room, which she shared with Karen Chandler. In the dead of the night, between 3 and 3:15 a.m., Bundy had entered her room, tripped over the trunk between their beds, and bludgeoned her, intending to kill her. Her roommate, Karen Chandler, was fast asleep, and the girl that Bundy would attack next. I heard our bedroom door slam open. I was opening my eyes a little bit because it kind of brought me into consciousness, and I'm awake enough to know someone's there. As I'm opening my eyes more and focusing, he raised his arm and had something in his hand. I thought it was a pipe or a stick. I didn't know what it was. He came down and hit me in the face. It just felt like pins and needles and knives in my face, she said. Her roommate, Karen, started stirring. So he went over to her and attacked her, and then returned to beat her. When one of the sorority sisters returned home from a date, the lights from the car she was in startled Bundy as it lit up the room, and he ran out of the sorority. Not having curtains turned out to be a lifesaver. Kleiner sat in her bed, rocking and moaning in searing pain until help arrived. I knew I woke up in intensive care. I didn't have any idea for sure why I was there, but I knew something bad had happened. I had at least one skull fracture. I think every bone in my face was broken, and my jaw was broken. I had a broken arm, and a couple of fingers on my hand were crushed, she said. After recovering in hospital, police asked her to return to her room with them to identify if anything had been stolen during the ordeal. There was blood spattered all over the wall, all over, and my green and white bedspread was covered. My beautiful bedspread I had just gotten a few weeks earlier that my mom and I had spent so much time picking out. The blood was everywhere, everywhere, on the walls and everything. That really stays in my mind. I can see it right now, she said, reliving the terror. Her jaw had to be realigned and wired shut, where she spent weeks recovering while living with her parents in safety until Bundy was caught for the last time. Once on trial for the murders and attacks that he had committed that night, Kleiner went to testify against him in court, answering all the questions while staring directly at him. She was a very strong and courageous woman who rebuilt her life after surviving the attack. While most victims of Bundy would want to forget him, Kathy took a different approach, deciding to try to understand him. She has read as many books about him as she can find. She was 22 when he was sentenced to death and 32 when he was finally executed. He was, and he lived, and he breathed, and he did what he did. And at some point, he was possibly a real person. I think it's good for people to read books about Bundy. I really do. They need to know that there's evil out there, but they can control it, she said in a Rolling Stone interview. Cheryl Thomas, January 15, 1978. Once Bundy had escaped the Chi Omega sorority house at Florida State University, his compulsion to kill was stronger than ever, even though he had just brutally murdered two women and injured two. He ran for 8 blocks and entered the off-campus home of Cheryl Thomas, right by the FSU stadium. That night, Cheryl had a date and drove to meet him at his apartment, and then enjoyed a night with him at the disco nearby. Once they had returned to his apartment, he invited her to stay the night instead of driving back home, but she was exhausted and decided to rather head back home, which was only a few blocks away. When she got home, she made an open-faced peanut butter and honey sandwich and watched TV for a bit before heading to bed. Once her roommate, Debbie Cicerelli, had returned to the house, Cheryl was already asleep. Debbie was woken up by a loud noise which startled her. She immediately called Cheryl's phone, which was in her room on the other side of the house, and felt panicked when she didn't answer it. Then they heard knocking and noises throughout the house and decided to call 911. Police responded and entered the house, finding Cheryl Thomas severely injured in her room, and later found that he had used the same log that he had used to beat the woman in the sorority. Cheryl's jaw was broken, and she suffered permanent damage to a nerve in her ear, which caused balance problems and meant that she could no longer be a dancer, which was her dream and passion. Cheryl had no memory of the attack but was very upset every time a male nurse came near her as she recovered in hospital. She was summoned to take the stand to testify against Ted Bundy, which was terrifying because he was representing himself. Bundy stared her down throughout the entire testimony and would not break his gaze. "I lived in fear until the day he was executed," she said.